Transmission start. Welcome to Where Did the Road Go? Join us as we wander off the path and explore lost history, consciousness, the paranormal, unexplained mysteries, alternative thought, and much more. We are present on the web at wheredidtheroadgo.com. Now here is your host, Soraya.
So this is our first Where Did the Road Go movie podcast. And for this first one, I'm joined by Joshua Cutchin.
Hello, everyone.
And the first movie we're going to deal with is a movie called The Hallow, because we've both seen it and we had talked about seeing it before, so it seemed like a good place to start. And the basic idea here, well, I'll read you the synopsis off of IMDb. A family who moved into a remote mill house in Ireland finds themselves in a fight for survival with demonic creatures living in the woods. Came out in 2015, and what did you think, Josh?
I was very excited about this from the moment that I saw it being announced, because I was like, yes, it's going to be a dark, intense, you know, nasty fairy movie. And I had a chance to catch it probably about 3 or 4 months ago now. And I enjoyed a lot of it. I did. I enjoyed a lot of it. I felt like it sort of made a quick detour into typical monster movie territory, which is fine. Like, I've gone on record like thousands of times saying that I'm a monster movie kid. But I was sort of maybe hoping for something a little bit more, a little bit more spooky, a little bit more esoteric, because, you know, that's the thing with horror films nowadays, is that like the first two thirds are genuinely horror, and then like the last act is usually some sort of variation on an action trope. But I thought some of the ideas and some of the representations of Faelor were actually really inventive, and I've got to give them kudos for that. And some of the moments in the very beginning were very, very chilling.
Yeah, and I kind of felt the same way. I did enjoy it. It's not.
Are we spoiling or not?
Let's try not to, for people who haven't seen it, because I don't think this is a really big movie.
Okay. It is on Netflix now, though. I can say that.
Yes. That's where I got it from. I got it from Netflix, and it was different. It wasn't like every other movie out there. We could talk about a few of the things that they had that were accurate to fairy lore. They had the guy getting poked through the eye hole, the keyhole of the door.
Right.
They had that. They had a changeling in it.
Yeah, and there's also this idea that you can be taken by the fairies.
Right.
That's sort of an idea that sort of circles around towards the end. And the changeling idea as well, yeah.
And they put in sort of a pseudo-scientific possibility to explain it.
Yeah, which is where it sort of lost me a little bit, because, I mean, there are very few media. I think we're going to talk about another one that actually does a pretty good job of this, but there are very few media that actually engage with Faelor on its own terms without trying to shove it into some sort of, like, maybe it was, you know, misidentified this or that, or maybe it was, like, you know, actually a race of people. There are very few that tend to, like, go full in on the, like, you know, fairies are weird sort of thing, and this one, you know, pulls its punch, I felt like, a little bit at the end. It's like, well, maybe it's just, you know, some sort of race of creatures or something, which is something that I didn't appreciate as much. But it was still an interesting take.
It was. It was definitely an interesting take. And it exceeded my expectations of it, I'll say that.
Yeah. There's some, you know, thematically, I'm trying to think of a good way to put this, but thematically, there are some other things that I really enjoyed, like the emphasis on nature.
Mm-hmm.
There are some real themes about almost conservationist sort of themes that you find. And I think there's some interesting things that sort of cross over with some of the things that we talk about on a regular basis, like, you know, the car trouble issue.
right.
And there is a fairy goo. There's a fairy ointment that's involved, if I recall correctly. Not necessarily employed in the ways that you would expect it from folklore, but, you know, they're sort of a goopy yeah, substance, which is something that I've, you know, that's something that you see in fairy folklore a lot, this concept of fairy ointment. So it almost, to me, seems like it's almost to me like if you know there's this trend in Hollywood to do reboots and to do remakes and reimaginings, and it's almost like, you know, this is the grim and gritty version of fey folklore. Like, you know, Batman Begins was like the grounded take of Batman. Well, this is the grounded take of fey folklore.
Fair enough. Yeah. Yeah. And it wasn't a reboot.
Yeah, exactly. No, and it was, you know, at the end of the day, I have to applaud the filmmakers for actually like trying to tell an original story. You know, that's something, mm-hmm. that's something really special.
Yeah. So I definitely think it's worth watching.
I would definitely agree. And it's got who's the one? There's a character actor in there who plays Bolton, Lord Bolton on Game of Thrones. I don't know if you're a Game of Thrones guy or not.
I am not.
Yeah. Oh, and you know what else I've got to say that I love about this show is that it is practical effects all the way.
Was it? There was no, yeah, that wasn't, I mean, CGI?
Well, I mean, there's some CGI, which is sort of like a thing that's going to happen, you know, just to sort of cover up the seams, which is what it should be used for. But a lot of it was practical. I'm just reading this right here. Practical effects. And yeah, it's just it's exciting to see that because, you know, for example, in this interview that I read about it, they said that they actually took advantage of modern technology to sort of augment the look of the creatures. So in other words, it's almost like so often nowadays you see CGI monsters and they bounce around the screen, and when they're bouncing around the screen, they don't feel like they have any weight to them. They don't feel like they have any substance to them. And I don't know, but like very rarely are there things that are done where I still can't pick it out. Like, you know, the things that have seemed the best to me are the mundane things that you don't know. It's just come out recently that in the latest Marvel film, Captain America: Civil War, they actually painted over the entirety of Black Panther's costumes, which, you know, I'll be damned. You look at most of that, and it looks like a real physical suit. So like to me, that's CGI should never be noticed. And if you can find a way to ground monsters as opposed to having them bounce around the screen like a, you know, like a video game character, I think that's that's really important. You know, I still consider the gold standard of digital effects nowadays to be Jurassic Park. And if you look at some of the stuff that comes out every summer and how weightless it looks, and you look back at Jurassic Park, you say, how is this movie this old as it is, you know? But there are people in suits in this, which does my heart good whenever I see that.
Yeah, it says the practical special effects were influenced by Alien with the use of lighting and Planet of the Apes 2001 with just augmentation with CGI.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's, again, I think that's the way to go.
And it was shot on location in Ireland as well.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's a very well shot film in terms of cinematography. It doesn't really look cheap or anything. I thought the acting was fine as well.
Yes, yes. It was also originally titled The Woods.
Yeah, and it's interesting. I noticed on Netflix, there is another film right now out in the horror section called The Hollow. Not The Hollow, but The Hollow. So I'm sure that there's some confusion there.
Yeah, we should make sure that's clear. It's Hallow is what the movie we're talking about.
As in 2015. Hallowed Ground or something, yeah. Or as in, yeah.
So now you mentioned you saw another one that had a fey type of feeling to it.
Yeah, my wife and I just finished Jonathan Norrell and Mr. Strange. Mr. Strange and Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell.
Yes.
Norrell. And it is shot through with fairy folklore. And, you know, it's interesting. I don't feel like any film has really done a great job of it. Of depicting fairies, but I have to applaud this show for doubling down on some of the stuff that you don't normally see in depictions of fairies. There's nothing, you know, there's nothing elfin about the way that they depict fairy folk. It's fascinating to me the way that they were actually able to weave in something that you find with fairy folklore where the dead are with the fairies, but not fairies. And that's sort of a thing that comes up as well, which you never, ever, ever see. Is this, you know, there's a real strong conflation between the fae folk and the dead in folklore. Right. You never see that really represented in media. So they did a great job with that.
So this is actually a TV show, not a movie.
Sorry. It's a TV show. I believe it was originally an Amazon short run TV show, and now it's on Netflix as well. Based off of a book by the same name, and I was actually turned on to it by Zach, one of the gentlemen down at Paramania. He said, "What do you think of the depiction of fae folk in that show?" And I'm like, "Well, I had no idea that there were fae folk in that show, but no, it's very, very strong." And you can tell it's not. So I feel like the author, it's a female author who wrote the book that this was based on. I feel like if the book is akin to what the series is, she did what every good author should do and didn't. She took the parts of the mythology that worked and sort of adapted them. Another thing that happens that you never see is it was common in fae folklore for changelings to be like a wooden log. Like a piece of wood that has a glamour on it to make it look like a baby. If it wasn't a sickly fae baby, it was a glamoured, some sort of glamoured object, often like a hunk of wood. And believe it or not, there's actually a changeling that comes from a log in this particular series, which is something that you just wouldn't see. And to be able to pull that off in a non goofy way, like a way that doesn't make you laugh, I thought was a real feat. So yeah, I was actually really impressed. I don't feel like, I mean, obviously I think they're planning extra seasons. The last episode sort of lost me a little bit, but I feel like whenever you make a film that talks about anomalies or magic or something, it's always going to have a little bit of that, because so much of the way that happens in the real world is unresolved, and you can't have that happening in cinema. So you've got to have some sort of like big over the top. Like I think that the protagonist is trapped inside of a moving tornado more or less for part of this part of the finale. So it didn't really stick the landing for me, but the journey was really great. It was really great. And I would recommend it to anybody who has an interest in fae folklore.
Well, I'm definitely going to check it out. The other one I saw this week that has some relation to things we talk about was called The Possession. And it came out in 2012, and Sam Raimi was one of the producers on it.
Horror god Sam Raimi.
And basically the synopsis says, a young girl buys an antique box at a yard sale, unaware that inside the collectible lives a malicious ancient spirit. The girl's father teams with his ex-wife to find a way to end the curse upon their child. So although it's a possession movie, it's not a traditional possession movie. Basically, they buy this box. The spirit kind of inhabits the girl because it's looking for a body. And they get it becomes a Jewish exorcism because the box was a Jewish prison. And I think that's the first time I've seen a Jewish exorcism put into a movie like that.
I feel like there was another one that was called, oh man, there was another one. It's a David Goyer joint. And I can't remember the name of it, but it also involved the entity that is in the film Possession, which I'm just superstitious enough to not want to talk about. Have you ever heard about the superstition around the D box as it were?
No.
And it was a long running thing on Mysterious Universe. Whenever they would have a show about that, listeners and they would have like technology fumbles, and they would have just problems in general. So, I'm a little bit hesitant with that. I know what I was thinking of, the Unborn. Have you seen that?
I don't know.
So it involves that. It also involves why not say it? Knocking on wood. It also involves a Dybbuk and is also a Jewish focused horror film. I can't remember it being particularly great, but you know, it was also released in 2009, so it's got some age behind it. So we'll see.
Yeah, 2003. I didn't rate it on Netflix, so I probably haven't seen it.
No, sorry, 2009.
Oh, The Unborn said 2003.
Oh, really? 2000, yeah. that old. Wow. Okay, I thought it had said 2009. Okay.
Unless there's more than one.
Let's see. You're hearing internet research on the fly, folks. there was a 1991 one, a 2003 one, and this one's the one from 2009, yeah.
Oh, okay. All right.
David Goyer. Like I said, I can't really remember. It was a Platinum Dunes release, which if you're a cinephile, that carries its own baggage with it. It's Michael Bay's production company, so it sort of has over the top goofy stuff. It's like I'm almost like a well funded Asylum Pictures almost, but I think it's worth seeing. So sorry, I didn't mean to completely unrail. Derail what you were talking about, but I feel like that whole Jewish horror thing is compelling, and I feel like it's underexplored, and I feel like it's very effective because there is this, the ancient sense that you get from Jewish horror and Jewish entities sort of carries a little bit more weight than a lot of shows where it's a Christian perspective of demonology imparts. It has a little bit more arcane aspect to it.
Now, the thing that always bugs me about these movies is, of course, it starts with based on real events.
Yeah, exactly.
And I can't even find what this is based on. Like, I've looked, I haven't been able to find off the top, I've only looked quickly, but I haven't been able to find what event it's actually supposed to be based on.
Well, and everyone assumes that there's some sort of, like, league of watchdogs making sure that people don't put incorrect claims like that at the front of movies. But no, I mean, like, the Coen brothers deliberately said that Fargo was based on real events.
Yep.
Just to get the audience to sort of let their guard down. But it wasn't at all. Like, not even in the slightest.
That's how that woman in Japan there came to the US thinking she knew where the suitcase was. Did you hear that whole story?
Yeah, I think they made a film on that too called Kiko's Gold, I think. I've not seen it, but I've heard about it.
I think it's Kimiko the Treasure Hunter.
Kimiko, okay, that's it. Yeah. That's
a very good film, too.
I was close. It reminds me of my wife has this thing where she, like, if she can't remember something, she swaps out the title for synonyms. So at one point she's like, I want to watch some more episodes of Plank Dynasty. And I'm like, I go back and forth with her for about 5 minutes. I'm like, what the hell is Plank Dynasty? I finally figure out that she means Boardwalk Empire. But she switched out Boardwalk
Empire
for Plank Dynasty. Not Duck Dynasty, no. So yeah, I guess that's what I was doing with Kiko's Gold. Kimiko the Treasure Hunter, not Kiko's Gold.
The ironic thing about Kimiko the Treasure Hunter is it is a true story based on someone who thought something else was a true story because it said it was, but it wasn't.
Yeah, it's almost like when they made the new version of The Producers. It was a film based on a musical about – it was a film based on a musical based on a film about people making a musical.
Right.
I guess it's a film inception. But back to the idea of this in regards to horror films, like – it doesn't take much. I mean, the things that happen in real life in regards to Fortiana are usually so subtle and so nonsensical and non-linear and narratively unfriendly that whenever you see something based on a true story that involves something anomalous, you can pretty much guarantee that, like, at least half of it has been fabricated whole cloth,
Well, the woman who was one of the people who experienced the whole events in The Conjuring said basically, although the movie captured some of the feel of what happened, nothing in that movie actually happened for real.
Right. And, this comes back to a thing that, I've been fond of addressing is the fact that, movies are a unique thing in and of themselves, and they have to be told in a certain way. So sometimes if a film bends the truth or compresses events or something to get to the feel of it, that's fine. Like, for example, The Mothman Prophecies isn't that great of an adaptation of The Mothman Prophecies, but
it got the feel down.
Yeah, the general weirdness that's there that's in that film is very evocative of the sort of vibe that you get from real Fortiana. So I don't have a problem with that. Yeah, the problem comes in with, like, you know, when you've got some of the more recent stuff, like you mentioned, the Possession, or even I'm not really even sure how closely the Conjuring films follow the experiences of the Warrens, which are problematic in their own right.
Right. Well, the Warrens were all about making money. I mean, they were pretty upfront with that about various people along the lines who then reported that and said, no, they told us to lie about it.
Yeah, basically. So, you know, I always take it with a grain of salt. I think that's a pretty good rule of thumb.
And then you have things like The Fourth Kind, which claimed to be, you know, a true story, and then it claimed to have actual footage, and people believed it, and it's like, this is complete fiction.
Yeah. The Blair Alien Project, as it were.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, the Blair Witch Project was interesting in the way they marketed it and stuff, because it was unique at the time. But for The Fourth Kind to basically try to do the same thing except with aliens is kind of like, okay, this is nonsense. And it wasn't very good either.
Yeah, I saw it probably, what, 8 years ago now or more.
Yeah,
so I tend to be a little bit in my mind, a little bit gentler to that film than a lot of people nowadays. But yeah, I think it deserves some condemnation alone on the way that it's, you know, muddied the water.
Yeah.
Because there are people that you still meet today who are convinced that it's real.
Well, I've heard George Norrie cited as real numerous times, even after being corrected.
Yep. I've heard similar stories as well.
And it's just like, it's fiction. Get over it.
Yeah. I mean, okay, you know what the best thing out there right now in terms of, you want to see something that's real, that's available online, that you can watch. It used to be on Netflix, but it's not anymore. But to me, like, I rewatched it again. I made my parents watch it. They were down here to help me with the move in. It's a documentary, and it's fantastic. It's the best UFO documentary out there, is Mirage Men.
I have it, and I haven't watched it yet.
You have got to see it. It's for me, it's climbing up there with The Fairy Faith, in one of those things that I just want to watch annually. Because it does such a good job of, like, it does such a good job of exposing what I perceive, or I believe, to be the 80% problem with ufology, like the 80% disinformation, which is out there,
mm-hmm.
while still maintaining this very earnest 20% 20% sense of wonder, and sense that there's actually something legitimate going on in terms of the UFO phenomena. It's great. It's available on Amazon Prime right now, I think.
Oh, okay. Let's see. Let me see if I can pull up one or two here that I've also seen recently that were pretty decent.
I don't want to burn through all the movies for your movie podcast ideas in one night, Soraya.
Oh, I have lots. I generally watch at least one or two movies a week on average. Depending on, you know, if I get through them or not. But in connection with The Conjuring, I had watched Annabelle a while ago, which was, again, based on the Warrens and the doll and stuff.
Yeah.
I hated it. I really hated it. I didn't mind The Conjuring. I know a lot of people loved The Conjuring and thought it was creepy. I thought it was okay. But Annabelle, I thought, was just awful. The general impression I got, first of all, I'm sure none of it was true. And I think I looked it up and was able to find out that pretty much nothing in that story was true. They just made it up as a preamble to The Conjuring. And, like, it almost seemed like it was part one of a two-part movie. And I know there's an Annabelle 2 coming out, but I'm not sure that's actually how they meant it to feel. Like, the movie ended, and I went, oh, that was it? Okay, you know?
Right.
Have you seen it?
Annabelle or the Conjuring
Annabelle.
2? No, I have not at all.
And I mean, know the Conjuring 2 is based on the Enfield hauntings.
Right. And from what I've heard, it's better than the first one.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of good stuff about it. I've also heard these goofy stories that people have been experiencing psi phenomena in their home after seeing The Conjuring 2. Have you heard about this?
No.
Yeah, there are a bunch of stories about people who watched The Conjuring 2 and claim that their house is now haunted, which to me is an indicative that probably your house isn't haunted. It's probably an indicative that, like, there's a lot more going under the surface of your consciousness than you realize.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, I think there are a couple of articles online about people who claim that that's happened to them since the film has come out on home video. Home video VHS tape, folks. You've heard it here.
I did thoroughly enjoy the Enfield Haunting that came out on the BBC. I believe it was a 3-part series. I heard about that and I never saw it.
I heard about that and I got really excited about it, but I never saw it.
From what I can tell, it's actually fairly accurate in the way things played out.
Do you know how it's available, or
not off the top of my head?
Okay.
I'm sure you could look it up on the, what's it called, the interweb?
The interwebs?
Interwebs.
The Google machine, yeah.
Yes, the googlies.
The goggle.
Another one I want to throw out, actually, that was excellent is called Banshee Chapter.
Banshee Chapter? Sarai, you're schooling me.
This I got from Netflix, so it is on Netflix. Journalist Anne Roland explores the disturbing links between her friend's sudden disappearance and ominous government research chemical and a disturbing radio broadcast of unknown origin. And it mixes in, it's very Lovecraftian, and it mixes in ideas of a super enhanced DMT, MK Ultra, and a few other things all mixed together in a really weird conglomeration. And it is a sort of a found footage type of thing where you only see the video of what they're doing while they're trying to investigate this.
Whew, okay.
But
I have a hard sell on found footage most of the time.
I'm not even sure it was necessarily found footage. I don't remember if it was supposed to be found footage or that's just how they shot it. I don't remember. I just remember it was all shot on videotape, you know, like from the video camera's point of view.
Nice.
But it was very, very creepy. It was very original and very weird. And it's a fairly independent film, I think. It did have Ted Levine in it, who was... the thing I know him from was he was the detective on Monk.
So I should look that up. Is it on Netflix? Nice. Okay, so something I can see immediately.
But I thoroughly enjoyed that one.
There's a film. It's 14 in sort of a Heaven's Gate-y sort of way.
Really?
So I guess that sort of counts. It's called The Invitation.
No, not familiar with that.
It's a film where, and the less said about it, the better. It has a very, very, like, it has one of the best final shots of a film that I've seen in a long time because it contextualizes a lot of the film in, like, one shot. It's a thriller, but it's more of a thriller of dread because you know something's got to be wrong, whether that means, like, second-guessing the protagonist or not. But a gentleman and his girlfriend get invited to his ex-wife's dinner party, and it slowly becomes apparent that there's a culty aspect to it. And like I said, I thought it was okay until the last shot, and I was like, wow, that's well done. And not even sort of a twist. It's more like it's not a twist. It's a contextualization of what you've seen, and it's so great.
I do have it in my DVD queue. I have not seen it yet.
Yeah, it's a good one.
Excellent.
I'm trying to think of recent stuff I've seen. I've heard, you know, returning to the theme of like fey folk films, say that 10 times fast. There are two that I've heard recommended to me. Fail, have you seen this one?
No.
I believe it's about a guy who finds a wood nymph in the forest and takes her home, but she's got this sort of real sinister. I've seen some shots of it presented as like creepy fey folk gifs on Facebook and stuff, you know, without any sort of accreditation. It was only until I saw like at the trailer, I'm like, oh, that's from that. So I've heard that that's really good in sort of a sinister way, but I've also heard that
what's the name of it?
Fail, T-H-A-L-E, I believe. Oh, let me double check. Yeah, Fail. The other one that I've heard has some like fairy thematics, while not being explicitly fey folk, is this film called Borgman, B-O-R-G-M-A-N, which is about this, it's a Swedish film about this guy who appears as a homeless guy and comes up to people's homes and asks for a place to stay for the night. He does this in an entire neighborhood and everyone rejects him. And then he starts, from what I understand, starts killing people. I think that's the setup of the film. But apparently there's some sort of like para supernormal natural fae-ish aspects to it. The person who recommended it to me said, they said, you know, I think you'll recognize some of the embellishments in there as being sort of indicative of fae folk phenomenon. I'm like, well, that's you cheeky man. That's a very subtle way to put it and pull me in. So that's on my list. You know, I think you can find that online too. So,
and how is that spelled?
Borgman, Borgman, I believe. Just like, you know, like the Borg from.
Yep. Yeah. It's on Netflix.
Really?
It is also in my queue.
Nice. Okay. Well, maybe we should do another one of these where we've actually seen these films.
We should. But I think we'll bring this one to a close. And okay. I am going to be doing these with other people as well, not just you know, the normal roundtable people. So we're going to get a lot of different movie ideas thrown around, hopefully. And hopefully people like it. A lot of people have told me they wanted us to do this, so we're going to do it. And we'll see where it goes from here. All right, Joshua?
Sounds good. It was a wonderful, fun time.
All right, and how about a little outro music? This is One Eyed Doll with Loveland. Check them out at oneeyeddoll.com.
Something's coming over me. Into your cave, want to be your little slave. Something's coming over me. On your stage, I long to be. Break into your head. Want to kiss you when you're dead. Through the mud, I will fill you with my blood.